Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Monday, 7th of September, 2020, and we ended last week. Interesting session where we saw a continuation of that sell-off of approximately the same magnitude as you can see on slide one as the Thursday sell-off. Of course, a lot of the focus has been on options trading and Friday being the weekly options expiry. It was quite interesting to see how that action shaped up. And then later in the session, we rallied quite strongly in the case of the NASDAQ, closing most of the or a considerable portion of the weakness and strength into the close ahead of this three-day weekend for the U.S., though we should point out U.S. futures do trade for some hours before the U.S. normal trading session. And curiously, those have been backed down a little bit. And we've got a lot to talk through with this option situation. We've seen a record listenership for some of our podcasts linked to this, and it is a very important topic to look at. Peter, what's your impression of the action? And of course, what are we looking for this week? It's a really interesting week ahead, isn't it?
It's a very, very interesting week. On Friday, we had that actually stabilization before the cash market opened. And then as the cash market opened, we just continued down and down and down. And as you said, we had the rally back in the late session. Maybe that's some of the spillover effects that we're seeing here in early morning, because we have European equities up 0.8% and we have S&P 500 futures down 0.7%. So pretty big widespread right there. I think the main question will be two things. So the first thing is, how much of all these retail investors that are speculating in naked call options, how much have they been burned last week? Because they place predominantly of all their bets in weekly options. So if the cash machine sort of ran out of money last week, they don't have much to fire with this week. And that puts less pressure on the market makers. And if you want to understand all the dynamics, go to analysis.saxo and read my two pieces on what's going on, or listen to our latest podcast. You'll get an idea of what we're talking about here. So that, I think, will be the main question. How much ammunition do these retail traders actually have left?
And whether they're pyramiding when they've been through, I mean, there's been a very successful strategy to be long some of these companies in this ramp. And obviously, if they've been pyramiding, which I suspect a lot of people do when they're gambling, if it's a gambling type of behavior, then yeah.
Exactly. They have to, I think they have taken all the gains, weekly gains, and sort of re-entered the market with more firepower. And then we had on Friday, just before we went into the weekend, I think that also added a little bit to the negative sentiment. We had that news out from FT. They're doing wonderful investigative journalism these days. They had a big story, big splash story on SoftBank. SoftBank being this conglomerate, this investment company in Japan, apparently being called a big whale in the options market, had made, I think it was $4 billion worth of trades. And that's not the notional amount, but the premiums paid to do call options. And I think it spooked a lot of investors, and the shares were down 7% in Japanese trading this today. And I think it really comes down to maybe a sort of a style drift, because I have some slides on SoftBank. I don't know whether you want to add something here, John, before I jump into sort of the fundamentals of SoftBank.
No, I mean, I think it's really key to see whether the story turns into something more systemic. Let's see what the full extent of their behavior is. But it is weird when you see somebody that has a lot of capital sloshing around, they're suddenly engaged in massive derivatives trading in the backdrop we've seen. But I'll let you get back to your slide before we bring in Otis' comments on oil, especially why it's not sending the positive signals we're seeing in some other places in commodities markets.
Okay, let me try to do it very briefly then. So we're on slide three and four in today's slide deck. I've put up some fundamentals just for you to get some perspective on SoftBank. I'll do a bigger piece, which will be out on analysis.saxo later today. The first slide, slide three, is the Bloomberg's default risk model, which takes in a lot of interesting fundamentals on the credit quality, because I think is the potential angle for a systemic risk in the market. And as you can see, I've highlighted with a red rectangle there, the interest expenses on their almost 16 trillion Japanese in terms of debt is really well covered by their cash flow from operations. So I think from a debt servicing perspective, I don't think SoftBank has any issues servicing their debt. But you can also see further up in that table, you can see that the market CDS pricing right now for a 5-year is 183 basis points versus Bloomberg's model saying the market should be at 60. So you see a ratio of 3 between the model and the market, and that is clearly showing the nervousness and also the sell-off today. So you have a market that is pricing in a very, very different risk picture for SoftBank. than what the model suggests. So there might be a lot of things that are hidden that you can't see a black box that you don't see in the overall numbers, and that's some of the things that I will go into in my piece just very quickly. So the default risk is still very low. Slide four, I think it's interesting because it's the big question is how big a problem is these call options trade. I've highlighted a screenshot from Ben Eifert, which is a derivatives advisor for a lot of institutional clients in the US, and he had a big piece or Twitter thread over the weekend, and he basically said that from the chatter he had with all the trading desk in New York, a lot of the trades that the SoftBank supposedly put on was delta neutral trade. So it was call spreads where they also had the underlying, and thus the market makers were not really being forced to the same degree as all the naked call option flow from the retail traders. And on the other slide, I just want to mention, so what is SoftBank? As you can see here on the, I took a slide from their annual report. You can see that the majority of their asset side is actually positions in SoftBank, which is the telecommunication arm in Japan. And then, but the biggest position is in Alibaba. So the SoftBank is very tightly connected to Alibaba and China's failure or success, depending on how you view it. So, but I'll look more into these numbers and give a much more color on it because it is important.
So basically your conclusion, Peter, is that the retail behavior is more important in terms of trying to decipher this, term this kind of volatility we're seeing right now in the stock market.
I think the crazy behavior we saw last week was driven by the weekly call option activity by retail investors. And the jury is out whether SoftBank is a new type of LCCM, but that's what I'm going to answer in my analysis.
So yeah, and Ola, to get to the discussion on oil, I mean, we had what some thought was a strong U.S. jobs report. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. We saw Treasury market reacting quite strongly to that. There's a lot of other data suggests that the jobs market is certainly experiencing some difficulties. But to me, the interesting commodity development last week, or an interesting signal from other markets, is this weakness in the oil market, which to me is a little bit of a red light for the strength of the recovery.
Absolutely, John. And we've been talking about it, I think, at least for a month, that we were skeptical about the upside. And because we basically had a month up until a week ago or so where there's a lot of tailwind that really should have taken oil higher. It hasn't. And that clearly tells us that the fundamental perspective is not strong enough to warrant a further price rise. And now we've been dropping now, I think, 6 days in a row. What's happening, obviously, is a little bit of lower risk appetite filtering through from the stock market, but obviously also some now disappointment that the market has failed to latch onto the rallies that we've seen across other asset classes. The demand outlook is still improving, but it's not improving fast enough. And that basically raises the question, did OPEC Plus increase production too soon when they started to lift production here in August? We're seeing now the trade data from China came out overnight, and their August import dropped by nearly a million barrels a day compared to the months before. So their record spending spree after the price collapse back in March has now come to an end. So we're probably going to see that drift lower towards more normal, to a normal level. So that's going to take a massive buyout of the market. And then also we're seeing basically the term structure. That's a small insert Bloomberg chart. On slide 8, it's a little bit difficult to see, but we're basically seeing the contango starting to widen, and a widening contango basically indication that the fundamentals are weakening, and that's and we have to remember it's Labor Day today. It tends to be the entry point to the or signal the beginning of the autumn season in terms of driving behavior, so less fuel consumption, and that could potentially leave more oils in the tanks, thereby adding some pressure in the short term at least. So we're focusing on this low from July in Brent today at 41.30. We found some support there overnight. But yes, it's not indicating a market that's improving as much as some of the other data is indicating.
But isn't it funny that we're down six sessions in straight sessions in oil, but you had energy, the energy sector being the best defensive sector in the price action on Thursday and Friday together with utilities. That's a pretty... I think unusual activity as well.
Because it's probably the one that's been the most sold while everything else was bought. So it finally got some support coming.
Yeah, I mentioned a couple things in there. And just to go back to the action, I think elsewhere, oil market was one interesting development late last week. But as well, the treasury market, really odd. Look at slide 7. Look at a treasury a U.S. T-note chart, and you see the big sell-off there. So we saw yields bumping all the way back up to above 70 basis points on the close, despite a lot of a lot of skepticism around this unemployment number drop. There's concern there linked to some figures within that data. And that was only the household survey that is used to calculate that unemployment rate. The non-farm payrolls change was in line with expectations at above 1.3 million. But there was a huge jump in the household survey and some internals, even in that survey, which supposedly showed this great result, suggesting that there is weakness in terms of length of unemployment and other factors. But nonetheless, the market decided to react. The Treasury market decided to react, and we saw this bump up in yields. I think it becomes a game changer if we see this continuing this week. And one thing that could get that in on, see some further momentum or a rejection of this move are the U.S. Treasury auctions this week, starting tomorrow with a 3-year, and then we have the 10-year and the 30-year on the subsequent 2 days. So just always when you see Treasury market volatility, just have it in the corner of your eye. If you're not used to following that as an indicator, I think we supercharge risk appetite situation if we're seeing weak risk appetite and weak Treasury markets at the same time.
Also, if you are involved in the gold market, where we now have seen this market stabilize in a wide range between 1900 and 2000, we obviously know that rising yields is not a good thing, at least in the short term for gold, unless it's happening with rising break evens instead of real yields. So, if we just see this pickup in yields continue, then obviously the gold potentially in the short term could be challenged
here. Yeah, the $1,900 level in gold, U.S. Treasury level, that trigger point around the 0.75% on the 10-year. And then the dollar, extremely quiet late last week, really nothing to write home about. We've got an ECB meeting this week. It's really critical. We have a very long speculative position. It's a broken record for me on this chart. But look at slide 5. You see that little line of consolidation. You've seen a choppy rising channel. I think if this is all giving way, it could lead to a much deeper consolidation back towards even 115 or for failing through the next figure or so. I want to bring in a Euro Swiss just a little bit. I want to keep watching that one. If it goes a bit higher here, we need to describe what is going on with Euro Swiss. It's not there yet. Some of its behavior day to day has been a bit odd to me. I'm wondering if that is some vulnerability because of the Swiss National Bank's balance sheet being very heavily comprised of gold and U.S. equities. So if those are both coming under pressure, that sort of barbell of trades, it could be interesting to see if a Euro-Swiss volatility suddenly comes alive. That's just to put a flag out there to note. And then we need to mention the COVID numbers. They're coming up badly in France, almost 9,000 on Friday. They've risen badly in the U.K. towards 3,000 was the latest daily total I saw. In the UK, they're talking about asking people to limit private gatherings because their contact tracing is showing that is where the infection is happening. And so it's not about a sort of general caution in the public space with all the sanitizer and masks. Apparently that's to some degree succeeding. It's at private arrangements. So a note of warning there, COVID numbers are not going the right way, even though fortunately the death totals have been very, very sluggish to rise in this latest round. Then I have a brief note on Brexit, but I'm talking too long. So I want you to talk about grains, which are really starting to heat up in the commodity space a little before we get to the calendar.
Yeah, we see now in the weekly commitment of traders reports for the past month that the agricultural space has really come back on the radar on speculative accounts. Hedge funds have been strong buyers across both grains and soft commodities during the past month. And as I highlight here on slide 9, it is weather concerns that are driving individual commodities higher. We've got this very strong appetite for crops from China. They have a torrential or horrible rain season, which has left many fields soggy, and they may need to increase their imports. So that's having impact, and also the dollar weakness that we saw up until last Tuesday. Just one word of caution, because now I've just put in a small chart which is showing the combined net long in grain, soybeans, corn, and wheat. We are doing a complete counter-seasonal pickup in speculative longs right now, because this time of year normally everything is known. We are just getting close to the harvest. Nothing really can go wrong, but that wrong at this stage. So the market basically know what to expect. This time around, they don't really know what to expect. And that's why we're seeing this mass amount of speculative buying. But I think we probably reached the point where we have to be a little bit cautious that there can be a correction coming pretty soon, because just the extent of the number of longs that has entered the market in such a short period of time.
Right. And I forgot to mention earlier when talking about the dollar a bit, do note that the dollar CNY, so the dollar versus the Chinese renminbi, is getting down towards its 200-day moving average, has essentially touched that. I think it's a critical level for that pair. I scratched my head a little bit at the aggressiveness of the renminbi strengthening, but could that be enough for now for China? So let's have a look at that. Now on the calendar, it's a very quiet day today. U.S. is closed for Labor Day, so we'll be watching the action in Europe today. Just want to briefly point out again those Treasury auctions, a Bank of Canada decision up on Wednesday, and then do note that we need to watch headlines this week on Brexit talks. Sterling is backing down quite a bit from that recent rally, and they're even talking about drawing up legislation to override some of the portions of the withdrawal agreement related to having a border effectively across the Irish Sea, which would mean that border would suddenly have to crop up instead. Between Northern Ireland and Ireland, something that was moved against heavily in the withdrawal agreement talks. So we'll be watching that and watching the stance from the UK and the EU side this week. For now, I think we'll call it a day, and this is going to be an interesting week ahead. Stay safe out there, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.